The World Food Program of the United Nations has also massive cuts.
Indeed, it's shocking. I was trying to talk just a few days ago to some old colleagues who work on these issues, and I find that they've been reassigned or they've lost their jobs. We only have one global emergency response system at the moment, and that is centered upon the World Food Programme. And so we need to make it work, because if it doesn't work, we're going to find ourselves facing the kinds of crises of mass mortality that we have simply not seen for half a century or longer.
Well, Alex Zavawi, thank you so much for being with us, Executive Director of the World Peace Foundation at Tufts University, author of the book Mass Starvation, The History and Future of Famine. We'll link to your pieces on Sudan and Gaza and more. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Shruhavdo Kadus, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Teresena, Tammy Warnoff, Charina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamaria Studio, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Hani Massoud, and Hannah Elias. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira. I am Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. KBOO's Board of Directors meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
I'm Doug McVeigh, host of Free Culture Radio. Every month, we bring you 30 minutes of news and information about people who use drugs, as we discuss topics like safe supply, safe consumption spaces, decriminalization, legalization, harm reduction, human rights, civil rights, and much more. Tune in and listen to Free Culture Radio on the third Wednesday of each month from 6:30 to 7 p.m. Pacific here on KBOO Community Radio 90.7 FM. KBOO.
Good morning. You are listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO FM, 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 in Corvallis, and via the World Wide Web, it is kboo.fm. Today is Monday, the 25th of March. It is about 8:02 a.m., and I am your host this morning. I'm Cecil Prescott. Thank you all for tuning in, waking up, and beginning yet another week with us here at your community radio station. Thank you for your thoughts, and I invite you to participate in our community conversation this morning as you listen to your neighbors. Consider what they have to say, offer some thoughts that you have, and create and build a fantastic community. For those of you who are listening from Oregon on this day, the 25th of August, for many of us, this is the beginning of spring break. The kids are out of school. And those of us who are parents are making sure everything is organized, that there's things for them to do, places for them to go, and all sorts of things to do. And so one of the things I thought about was when we think of spring break, it's an opportunity to explore new things, new places, new events. So if you are on spring break, if you have a student and you are free, what are some of your thoughts? What are places you like to go, events you're planning to attend? What are you and your cohorts are planning to do? How do you intend to spend spring break? Now, give us a second, because, you know, people are posting on social media, you know, they went to this event or that event, and just exploring, letting everyone know what exciting things they are doing. But what exciting or not so exciting thing you may be doing. This is related to a concern I have, and I solicit your thoughts and opinions about how we create spaces for one another. What are some common areas that we interact with one another? Spaces where intergenerational activity takes place. Remember the old days of public parks, libraries, places where, or community centers, places where people might stay and create community together. So what are your favorite public spaces? Now, this is related to, I wanted to mention something I ran across in a local newspaper, the Portland Mercury, a few days ago. It was an opinion piece talking about this, you know, relatively recent place in Portland, Oregon, Soho House, and the disappearance of public spaces. Now, I don't know if any of you have been invited to become a members of the Soho House, but it's a mixture of apparently what ought to be available for everyone, but just not, because if you're not, you know, a certain type of person or can afford it, that space is not available. But what are public spaces? And what can we think about it? Libraries. I remember as a child going to the library, and it was so exciting because, you know, as a 6-year-old child, what I remember is this august, ornate building, and my dad taking me to the library and getting my first library card. And it was so exciting to go there, and remember going there to the library weekly, as in, certainly was an event space, but it was also a place where we saw our friends, we got our books, and we walked home. Or perhaps you can think of public spaces such as parks. Is there a particular park you like to go and sit or walk through? Other spaces, community public spaces, have been schools. I mentioned community centers, certain worship spaces. These are places where people have the opportunity to participate and to engage with one another. In this article in about public space from Portland Mercury, we are reminded that a lot of public spaces are disappearing. But Taylor Griggs, who wrote the article in the Portland Mercury, they write, "But all hope is not lost. Despite the doom and gloom, there are still a lot of cool places to hang out in Portland. In order to find them, one must get rid of the broadcast media host inside their head. Our city libraries and parks are excellent, actually, and it's okay if you see homeless people there. Plus, Portlanders literally love to hang out, and we are great at creating new, unconventional third places to suit that fancy. And Taylor Griggs mentioned a couple of unconventional third places. Weekly coffee outside meetups, the paved pop-ups on Southeast 7th Avenue, the bike happy hour, the worker owner pub containing a radical leftist library, actually located down the street from Soho House. These are all public spaces, but what are public spaces? And why are they important? For those of you who are in the Portland area, the Central Library recently reopened after it was remodeled. There's been a lot of talk about are people returning to the central city and public spaces. And there have been a lot of people saying, well, there are too many houseless people in public spaces, and it's not a great place any longer. Taylor Griggs and others say, no, these are all public spaces. So what are some of your public spaces that you affirm? This spring break week, are there places or things that you are planning to do that you want to talk about? Let me hear some of your thoughts. 503-231-8187. Are you concerned? Are there public spaces that are important to you? Let me know and share with one another. And are you concerned about the lack of public spaces or how people interact in public spaces? How things have changed over the years? Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station. I'm Cecil Prescott, and we're beginning our conversation, but just some observation about public spaces, how we interact with one another. This is in Oregon right now. We are on spring break. Schools are closed. People are going to all different places, opportunities. What are some of your places, events that you and your cohorts, your loved ones are exploring during this time? And in related to that, in terms of spaces, are spaces limited? Are there enough public spaces? Do you have access? Do you access libraries or parks? Are those places you once went to and no longer go to? Are there other places that only you and a few people know about it's so important for you? Let me hear. We need some ideas about what to do or where to go. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. Give us a call and let's hear your thoughts. I'm Cecil Prescott, and we'll go to a caller and hear what Lenita has to say. Good morning, Lenita.
Good morning, Cecil. I really love your show on the Mondays. Great way to start a week. I just wanted to chime in on your topic of public spaces. You know, I used to play hooky from the Portland Public Schools at the library. And this was a time when they were not used so much. And I wonder, as the libraries start to reopen, if they'll still welcome everyone. And it doesn't matter if they're homeless, or I'm sorry, if they're houseless, or if they live on a large estate. The wonderful thing about libraries, other than having books and videos and places where you can meet people, is that you see everybody.
Yes.
And the expectation of behavior, I think, you know, how do you behave in these public spaces? Are you respectful? Do you use the group, the fact that there's a group of people here, to proselytize various religious beliefs? You know what I mean?
Yes.
So the issue of public spaces is there a kind of standard of behavior to make these public spaces comfortable for everyone?
Right. Community agreement, you know, in some situations. But how is that possible, do you think? Can we find common agreements about how to behave together in public spaces? It's a challenge.
You know, I don't know. I know that there's been cases where people in public spaces, such as the library, will look at porn right next door to a child walking up and down, and families and individuals who are not using the public space to view such materials. Is that a violation? And of course, in the public libraries now, we have security guards. Does it make me feel comfortable to go in a public space and be surrounded by security?
Oh, okay. I want to go back to that time when things felt a whole lot more comfortable. I used to love going to the library on Saturday morning, picking out my books, but yeah. Well, yeah, let's...
Well, those days are over, but, you know, I really like this discussion of public places and the need to continue to have public spaces, even if we disagree with each other. It's important to have these public spaces. I could be sitting next to a Ku Klux Klan member and not knowing and still say good morning and goodbye, because that's, you know, as you talked about, code of behavior in public. How do you reinforce this? How do you enforce it? And I would say you create that code of behavior by modeling that behavior, like when you're in public, even if you disagree with the person next to you, just to nod and, excuse me, is this seat being taken, you know, things like that. So I think we can instill a code of behavior by just modeling the behavior, but public spaces are necessary, from the library to, you know, parks. Like my favorite park is Peninsula Park.
Oh yes.
But I feel uncomfortable now seeing the changes that Irvington Park has gone through. It's just the basket of gentrification. And when I grew up there, Irving Park was a park we used to go and pick up bottles to cash in for extra money.
Oh.
So things change, you know.
Things change. Yes. Thank you for sharing and for reminding us in terms of public spaces, and also the need for community to come together to find out how we get along with one another, agreements, and how we treat one another. And I go to Irving Park frequently, like every part of my, you know, daily discipline. And yeah, it's really different these days.
Well, I appreciate the show, appreciate the topic. Support KBOO. Have a wonderful week.
Thank you so much. You as well. And you're listening to More Talk Radio here in your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott. We just heard from Lenita. We were mentioning, we were talking about public spaces and where are the spaces where people from all walks of life are able to gather. They mention the public library and how that's a place where people from all walks of life, different stages of life, different ages, different income level, and as a space where people can gather together. A challenge when people from different communities gather together is how do we find an agreement on how to behave or how to act in public space? What are some of your thoughts? What are some of your spaces that have been important for you? Is there a favorite library, a favorite park, favorite community center? What do these places mean to you? What have they meant for you? And what can they mean for you in the future? Are there spaces? Are you concerned about the lack? Or are there many spaces? Maybe there's a secret space that you don't want everyone to know about. Huh? I'm interested in knowing. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And speaking about public spaces, there are a lot of things in public spaces. Some things, as our last caller mentioned, there might be someone who's doing something that we don't agree with, that we find distasteful. They might be looking at something. She mentioned in terms of computers in the library spaces. But also in public spaces, it's also has been historically a place where people and places are remembered. So we have parks, and we mentioned different parks in community often are named after historical figures, people of significance. In these public spaces, there are often monuments and pieces of public art. And those of us throughout the country who experience the racial reconciliation uprising that took place 2019, 2017, 2018, and especially in 2020 and the years following that, what we saw in this racial reckoning period were people who, throughout the nation, saw certain monuments or statues and thought they should not be there. So we are all familiar with statues that have been torn down. Those in other parts of the country are familiar with Confederate statues being removed from public spaces. But here in Oregon, over the last few years, particularly in 2020, we saw in public spaces statues being torn down. So we had in Portland statues such of former presidents and Lincoln, Teddy Roosevelt being torn down. We saw a statue of Thomas Jefferson being removed from a school because of the legacy of Thomas Jefferson. So, you know, we see all of this being done, and what can be done? Well, you know, our ever present and hardworking city council is working on this. And Dan Ryan, city council person, has drafted a proposal. Let me read you a little bit from an article from the Scanner by Sandra Sorensen. She writes, five statues toppled or damaged in 2020 remain in storage as the city of Portland decides their fate. Recognizing that not all public art has aged well, the City Council voted unanimously last week to establish a public monuments policy and review criteria regarding the nearly 170 outdoor sculptures owned by the city and county. This policy was drafted by Commissioner Dan Ryan and his team. He says, this policy is about creating a public process for Portlanders to be able to engage with the city when they have a complaint about a monument or believe a monument should be removed. This policy does not decide which monument should be returned or not. At its core, this policy establishes a transparent and accessible platform for Portlanders to voice their concerns or opinions regarding the city monuments. So, as we go through this process and we've seen toppled statues of Abraham Lincoln, George Washington, Theodore Roosevelt, Oregon publisher Harvey Scott have been removed, what ought to be standards of statues as the city go through this new process and invite public to weigh in terms of how they might be reviewed. What are some of your suggestions in terms of public art, public monuments? Are there persons or people or places that should be remembered or highlighted? Certainly. Who would you put up in your favorite place? Who would you remove it in your public space? Are there pieces of art as you walk in your public parks or go through public spaces and you said, who is that person? Why are they important? Why are they being remembered? Or are you saying they should not be remembered? This other person should be remembered. As the city of Portland and other places review their policies, similar policies, guidelines are being drawn up in places such as Chicago, San Francisco, and Vancouver in terms of engagement of the city, of the public, in terms of deciding which places and which monuments should be placed. What are your thoughts? Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And also, if you have thoughts about how our earlier conversation in terms of public spaces, where are the public spaces and what are your favorite places, let us know. Let us go to our next caller and hear their thoughts. Our caller is Santiago this morning.
Good morning. Yeah, just a quick note. You know, I think the biggest problem that we have is just that we don't have any means to discern, to really, like, we don't have, like, critical thinking skills that are, and it's by design, we don't have critical thinking skills to address a lot of the things that are causing a lot of stress. You know, like the people who were mad about Thomas Jefferson, like they don't look at him through a critical lens. I mean, you know, like they don't want to have to. You know, it really just comes down to like idolization. You know, they want to create like this dogmatic version of history, and they don't want the people who complain about it don't want to look at it. They don't want to see it through a critical lens, and so, like, when you tear it down, it's like you're tearing down their soul because they have so much invested in what is essentially a lie, but that lie is so important to them that they're willing to hurt other people to protect it. And so, really, I mean, what we should be doing that I've talked about before is, like, we really need, like, Portland could be first to do it, like, our legit Truth and Reconciliation Commission, because the fact of the matter is that, you know, there's a lot of black and brown folks who are pushing for, you know, who are pushing for a revolutionary nationalism. And on the flip side, America's already losing prominence and power. So it's really just a matter of how these people who are so invested in what they think America is are going to go about losing their power.
Mm.
So, you know, like if we want to reclaim public spaces, then we have to be able to reclaim critical discourse. You know, there's no monument that can't be erected, either for whether it represents a general, like an overall good or an overall bad, that can't be argued against for any reason because people simply lack the critical skills to, we've all lacked the critical skills to be able to assess things.
I want you to complete your statement, and then I want you to expand. I'm talking about how do we gain these critical skills, and why don't we have those? So continue.
Well, we gain the critical skills by, I mean, my solution is dialectical materialism. It's a foundational to Marxism, where we simply examine a thing and how it works and the various opposing mechanisms that allow something to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, like you take a, and it's really like, I mean, you just take one thing and you find out what makes it work. And that's how you understand the thing in its totality. Like we understand, we all brought up thinking America was this place that was founded on, you know, democracy and egalitarianism and blah, blah, blah. But then you come to find out that, no, it wasn't that. It was actually, you know, it was actually a lack of people wanting to fight for the land that was taken from them by capitalists, so they found it cheaper to come over here and slaughter people for land.
Okay.
And now you have to balance those two things in your mind. How do these two opposing forces work that hold this thing together?
Right.
You know, and that's just a real plain, not real detailed example, but you can do it for anything. And we just don't have that.
Yes.
You know? And then in terms of just like, you know, like the reason why we don't have that is because, you know, whether it's, you know, churches overall or, you know, government entities, they thrive, most of them thrive on people just being ignorant. You know, you can't pull the wool over somebody's eyes if they know how to knit a sweater. You know what I mean? Like, you just,
Okay. I was just visualizing that. Very good, Santiago. Hey, thank you so much, and I appreciate your thoughts and your ability to make it plain and to challenge us. Thank you so much for calling.
Yeah, no problem.
And you are listening to More Talk Radio. So what statues have you seen? Hey, Corey wanted to tell us about statues they saw in Atlanta, I think?
Yes.
Oh, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I was at a conference last week in Atlanta. It's called, I'm an academic, it's called NSBE, National Society for Black Engineers. And so I was there, and I was talking to some young man, and I was talking to this other gentleman, and he was part of this group that was trying to remove Stone Mountain.
Oh, yes.
And we were talking for a while, and he was just like, you know, this had a lot of momentum in 2021, and now the momentum is dead. Mm-hmm. And from what he told me, basically, many of the African Americans, the black people in Atlanta, or you know, and even in Georgia, they're just apathetic towards it. It's been there, and even though there have been these intense, you know, periods of racial segregation and discrimination, they just learned to ignore it, and now they're kind of focusing on, you know, just securing jobs, improving local school infrastructure. So it's interesting just to see how they were saying that energy was there 4 years ago, and then it just went away. And on the flip side, I'm heading to Toronto later this week to give a speech, and I'm going to a place known as Toronto Metropolitan University, which used to be known as Ryerson. But they changed the name because, you know, Edgerton Ryerson was linked to Canadian residential schools. And so what they did is, like, this university has been around for, you know, generations. They're like, you know what, we're actually going to do something. We're going to change the name because, you know, we have indigenous staff. And that's the thing, like, at least in a place like Canada, and I even understand, like, I think that's why I've always said this. I prefer the Pacific Northwest. I know that Portland, Seattle, Vancouver, BC are not perfect places, but at least I do see some positive change. But I also think that many of the, you know, growing up in Texas, growing up in the South, you can become apathetic. I think I mentioned this before. Our high school mascot was Rowdy Ranger, who was basically a Confederate soldier.
Mm.
And it's still there. And the funny part is when they decided about 3 or 4 years ago, they're like, well, let's change the name. The pushback from the black students that went to school there, I was reading, it was all on social media. I was just like, wow. Like, you know, these people that I know, like, how dare you try to change the name of this high school who's named after a Confederate general to something else? Mm. And so, like, yeah, I think, yeah, Santiago has some valid points. I think there's a psychology to where, sadly, you have a place like Toronto, right, which is more progressive, or even Portland or Seattle, which I have seen some name changes at some of the high schools here in Seattle, and I know that they've done stuff in Portland as well. So it's an interesting conversation, but I do, like, the Atlanta piece, you know, I don't like going to the South, but it did shock me because you could just see how dismayed he was, like, all this energy. Look at, he's showing me, like, all the signatures he had 4 years ago.
Yes.
And now it's just like, yeah, it's pretty much no one cares anymore.
Well, that's somewhat sad to say, but I will also say that the fact that they had a lot of energy, for those of us who take a longer view in terms of the struggle, I hope that some of the skills that was developed, and that people will be able to pursue it in different ways moving forward. So,
yeah, thanks so much, Cecil. We'll talk to you later.
You have a great day. And you are listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. We began our discussion this morning about public spaces. What are public spaces? Are there enough public spaces? Are there favorite public spaces that you like, that mean a lot to you? And in terms of public spaces, what do we think in terms of public monuments? What do they say about us? And how do we decide what monument should be placed and where? Our last caller mentioned how this is an ongoing issue, not only in this area, but certainly throughout the nation and indeed throughout the world. The fact is, how do we decide who do we honor, who do we remember, and how we remember? It may be a way of asking that question. How do we remember people such as Theodore Roosevelt, the long-term editor of the Oregonian, Scott, Thomas Jefferson? How do we remember those folks? Not that we ignore them. I would not argue that we ignore them, but as the caller reminded us, how do we remember, I think Santiago mentioned, how we remember them. So the fact that Thomas Jefferson, for example, was a slave owner, rapist, but was also the author of important documents in the history of the United States. Third president of the United States. How do we remember individuals? What are ways in which we do that? Let me hear your thoughts. I'm interested in who we need to remember, but we haven't remembered. What are some individuals in your community that we should focus on? And in terms of public spaces, are there enough public spaces? Where are there public spaces? And how do we create spaces where people can interact with one another? Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Let me read a little bit more about the desire to come up with a new policy in terms of how we ought to create public public spaces. John Adam, writing for KGW, reminds us about the monuments that were torn down, and speaking about how things might be reimagined. And so talking about the proposal from Commissioner Dan Ryan, the proposal doesn't decide what happens to the statues already removed, but we will create a process to deal with the controversial statues in the future. So one of the statues slated to return is the Thompson Elk Fountain. Now, the elk was a fixture of Portland for years before it was targeted by protesters in 2020 and later removed by city officials. Thomas Elk Fountain will return at some point in 2024 after the city allocates $1.5 million for the project. Residents have until February 28 to share their inputs, and this might be a test on how we reimagine public space and public monuments. I'm interested in hearing some more of your thoughts in terms of public monuments and in terms of public spaces. How do we negotiate public spaces, and are there enough public spaces? We began this morning by talking about spring break and how this is an opportunity for families and people to explore new areas, new spaces. What are some of your spaces that you are exploring? What are some of your favorite spaces? An earlier caller mentioned how they enjoyed, when they were younger, going to a certain park, but how it has certainly changed somewhat. What are some of your spaces? Give us a call. And let us listen to our next thoughtful listener, Brian. Good morning, Brian.
Hi, how are you? I hope I'm thoughtful.
Well, you are.
go ahead.
No, go ahead. I want to hear your thoughtful.
I came in late to your conversation, so I hope I'm not repeating something or getting off track, but it seemed like part of it was about how to think of these people in the past, you know, there's monuments, and how to think about people in the past that we found out were not perfect. And I've kind of dealt with this my whole life as a musician, that I would hear music and just be enthralled by the beauty of it.
Yes.
And then as I learned more, I'd find out that sometimes these people that were making the music that I loved so much were not perfect human beings. You know, I remember finding out about, you know, I loved Frank Sinatra's stuff, you know, with the Count Basie band, and then I'd find out, well, you know, he had some quirks. And then I'd, you know, as a saxophone player, say Stan Getz or Ben Webster, you know, played such lush, beautiful, gorgeous music, and you find out they could be kind of temperamental people. it's always been a thing for me. How do you separate this love of, say, the music, or, say, somebody's love of things that they did, and separate that from some of their other actions? You know, there are some people in the human rights world that, you know, over years we found out that they were not perfect human beings, and can we still value the things that they did of beauty or of substance or of cultural significance, and can we kind of hold two things at the same time, right?
Right.
It seems like lately there's been a tendency of whatever the modern world is, of trashing somebody and throwing them away, everything they did and everything that they brought, because of a problem that they had. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, so-called canceling, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, I think that's something we really need to deal with as a society.
How do you...
How
do you balance that? You know, because you're quite right. You know, no one's perfect. So certainly, you can appreciate someone being an artist. That doesn't mean we have to buy into the way they treat, you know, people around them. But
right. Well, you know, like the music thing, I kind of, it dawned on me, or somebody exposed me to the idea that I remember myself when I used to feel uncomfortable when people would give me a lot of compliments. You know, I don't know, just kind of an insecurity thing or whatever. And then it dawned on me that at that particular point in time, I happened to be in the right place at the right time somehow to be a conduit. And the energy is out there, and it's fine to me. It's like the energy is finding ways to get through. Sometimes you become a conduit, and you're able to channel that energy and bring it to others. And so, you know, sometimes you're not tuned in, sometimes you are, and that's how I see it. And I think these people, you know, they happen to be tuned in at a certain time, and they were a conduit, and the energy flowed, and it was beautiful. And it doesn't always flow, but when it does, we should, I think, relish that and honor it.
That's very helpful. I appreciate that. And let me ask you, related to that, because you know, there, you mentioned like Frank Sinatra, but you know, you can name any number of people. Any number of artists that you admire. I'm thinking of one artist whose music I really, really enjoyed until, you know, things about this artist was revealed. So I find it difficult to listen to this artist. Or should I listen to that? Because am I, you know... affirming their bad behavior.
It is such a tough one, but like I said before, it seems like that person at some point, what do you feel when you hear that artist? Are you able to ever anymore, are you able to separate the artist from the bad behavior? You just can't. I'm asking, can you separate it at all? And if you can, what does it feel like if you can't, when you do separate it?
Right, right. And it goes back to what I think an earlier caller was mentioning, just in terms of how we understand and how we think, and the need for critical thinking, and to be able to make those type of separation and to analyze people and movements.
I think a lot of times, like just going to the music thing, I think we think so much like egotistically, like, you know, this is my music, or you look at somebody and say that's their music, that and it's just theirs. But I it goes back to that conduit thing. I think
conduit,
that you can listen to that. You're like listening to the music. You're not listening to so and so. They happen to be the conduit at that moment and brought it through along with other people. You know, you are hearing, and that's the other thing too. When you hear a great piece of music, no matter whose name on it, you're not just hearing them. You're hearing the culmination of a lot of people's efforts, whether it's a sound engineer or whatever, or a bass player or whatever. You know, you're hearing not just that person. They were just the point of the point of the arrow. But I think, you know, to maybe allow you to listen to that music, realize you're listening to the music, the energy that came from, not, you know, they just were the passageway for it.
Wow.
And if you do that, I think you can enjoy it.
You've been very helpful for me with your explanation in terms of music. So like, for example, you just said, like, when I'm listening to a piece of music, I'm not only listening to the guy playing the trumpet, but there's the sound engineer, there's all of the, you know, things around it, you know, the composer, and all of that makes that moment.
Right. The only time that might not be true is with Stevie Wonder, and that's okay. He did it all.
Okay. Right. Oh, wow. And
hopefully that's helpful. I know it helped me one time. I was playing at a club, and I put together a band that was just awesome, and I got all these compliments, and I was feeling so kind of, I don't know, not ready to accept all these compliments, and all of a sudden it dawned on me that I don't have to accept them, that I just happen to be in the right place to channel that energy amongst a lot of other people in my band, and that I could just take that energy from the person that was paying me the compliment, and I don't hold on to it. I could just pass it through and let it continue, like let the flow just keep going, and you know what I mean? Not
yes.
hold it like egotistically, like, oh, this is my compliment, but they're just complimenting the music, and I can just let it flow right on through, and it's like, oh, that was so freeing. I was like, oh, this is great.
Right on. Hey, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Have a great day. And which reminds me, so like Thomas Jefferson, you know, it's inspired writing the Declaration of Independence. He was just like an instrument, you know. That wisdom was just flowing through him. And certainly, you know, he could talk about all humans being equal while he was a slave owner and a rapist. Somehow, even that did not deter the truth that was able to flow from his pen, and it has a life in and of itself which is separated from the individual. And so the idea of freedom, which was written by a slave owner, was later embraced by those who were enslaved as saying that it is greater than the individual, and that even though that person was less than a perfect, that the ideas transcended that individual and certainly their time, and was more powerful to therefore be embraced by society. Okay, so I can listen to music of that artist who, but as our last caller reminded us, being creative, the creative process is more than an individual. It includes many, many parts. So therefore, to go back, I suppose, talking about statues and monuments, it occurred to me that certainly we should remember as much as possible a person's total legacy, the good, the bad, and the ugly. But as Brian suggested when he was talking about music, I think it also relates to like art or statues, that a statue of a individual is not only just reflect on that individual, but it is also the work of the artist, the creativity of the artist, and also the reflection of the experiences of the artist that the artist brings into that creative process, as well as the history and legacy of the person who is being remembered. So statue of Thomas Jefferson is more than a statue of Thomas Jefferson, and it's not putting in concrete his whole life, but maybe it reflects a portion of their life. As all of our wise participants shared today, none of us, no one is perfect. But I think, as one caller reminds us, we need to examine people and persons critically and take in a whole picture of their experience, their background, and what they are saying, so that when we create a policy that the city of Portland is doing, a policy in terms of monument review, I believe that the goal is to be faithful to what that person, who that person is or was, and to accurately talk about the times they lived in and the experiences that impacted them and their impact, continuing impact on society. And as our callers reminded us, it also reflects not only the individual who is the person being remembered, but also reflects their times, the artists, and our society, our goals. So, if you are on spring break this week, perhaps you should go to a certain place that you haven't been and say, why is that there? And why is it important? And if you are concerned about public spaces, perhaps you should say, what are those particular spaces that we should think about and engage in? There are many public spaces that we don't often access. And if you have some time this week, if you're on spring break, maybe a time for you to go to that certain place and say, oh, I haven't been there. This park, this museum, this community center, I haven't checked out that space. There are lots of opportunities to do that, and I hope that you take the chance to do that. There is so much that weighs down upon us and so much that make us sad. But as spring break remind us, all persons need to take time to stop and notice all that is around them, and to breathe. I said a while ago, and someone reminded me these things, you know who you are and what the things you are fighting for, the things you are struggling for. Maintain that focus. And also, you need time to relax and to breathe and to be able to build community and support one another, because it's hard work. We need to find ways to nurture, to be aware of one another, to be aware when someone's just looks as if they are tired, and to be able to spend time and to take care of one another. It's important to struggle, but also remember what we are struggling for. And we have to take care of ourselves so that we can be here for the long haul. As you take some time to look around you, look around, nurture one another, and build community. Perhaps you have a favorite public space. Go to the library, read a book. Go to the park, sit down on a bench. Talk to your neighbor. Perhaps it is a community center. Go there and enjoy the exercise, the pool. There are lots of things we can do and say. All of us are called to build community together. So whether it is talking about public art, whether it is finding a space, a community space, or whether it is building community, let's do it together. This week and in the week ahead, let us continue the things that we are doing. You are listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I want to remind you that if you are listening live, you may continue to listen. If you are not listening live, you may continue to listen. But if you are listening live, stay tuned to what programming that is next. And I want to remind you that if you are interested in finding out more about KBOO, how to not only be a member but also to participate, go to our website, KBOO-FM. And before I go, let me remind you that we have one more call. Oh, no, we don't. Okay. I was looking to our engineer. Let me remind you that we are approaching the end of our programming. This has been Cecil Prescott, and thank you so much for listening. Have a good week. Take care of yourself and take care of one another.
To KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm. KBOO's board is recruiting directors.